We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. Joining me now, Chris Biederman. And boy, that was a lot. That was a lot. Shout out to our friends at Cooperage. Shout out to our friends at Lamb Chops. Lamb Chops, of course, the official clothing brand of Candlestick Chronicles. And you can go to sglambchops.com right now and get yourself decked out in a hoodie. You can get yourself decked out in some sick-ass shorts or some sweats or t-shirts, whatever you want. They got their fall and winter line. And a huge congrats to them, by the way. They partnered with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they had their launch at the team store at the Timberwolves Arena, and it went crazy. Like, there were lines out the door. It sold out. Everything sold out in 5 minutes. Just incredibly successful for them, and we love to see it, and we love that they are a sponsor, and we love Lamb Chops. Candlestick20 is the promo code, by the way. 20% off.
Was rocking my Lamb Chops sweat shorts with the zippered pockets all throughout the game. Perfect loungewear, especially when it's cold and rainy outside.
Yeah.
Exceedingly comfortable for the couch. And you know what? It also looks good out and about.
Sure does.
Whenever I wear my Lamb Chops, I get a lot of compliments. So
yeah.
make sure you check out their websites and cop some good stuff, because it's great quality. It's comfortable. And as
my dad, Kyle, looks. Yeah, it does look dope. My dad rolled over to watch the game tonight in his Lamb Chop sweats. And I was like, rocking the Lamb Chops. He's like, dude, they're the best. They're the best sweatpants I own. Like, damn. All right, shout out. And he just said that to me. He's not even like out and about endorsing that. He already knows I know. But he still, he loves them a lot. And I know you will too. Go to sglambchops.com. Follow them on Instagram at sglambchops for looks at their latest styles. And use that promo code Candlestick20. Get 20% off your order today. We're also sponsored by Cooperage Brewing. That's the home of Candlestick Chronicles Hazy IPA. I cracked one open at some point in the third quarter because it was like, you know what? I'm going to need this. This is a lot. There's a lot happening. And you know what? It's been great. It is so delicious. Not only great in the summertime when you want a crisp, refreshing beer to drink, but you know what? It's also good when it's pissing rain outside and very cold. It's delicious then as well, it turns out.
Sources have told this podcast that Candlestick Chronicles Hazy IPA is available in Noe Valley in San Francisco. If you're in the area, I'm not entirely sure which store. But if you know of a good store to buy some craft brews in Noe Valley and in the city, go check it out and you'll find some. And obviously, look, we talk about Cooperage every episode. It's your favorite brewery up in Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
Obviously there are a lot of very high profile names when it comes to the craft brew scene in Santa Rosa and Sonoma County, and they all know about Cooperage, and a lot of them go hang out and drink at Cooperage after they're done brewing their own beer because they appreciate how good it is. So you should too, whether you're in Santa Rosa, stop by the brewery there or order it online or check it out in a local establishment if you can find it, and enjoy it because it's delicious and everything they make is good, from the wheat beers to the double California IPAs. Like, it's all good stuff.
Shout out Cooperage, cooperagebrewing.com. You can get a case shipped right to your front door. Just be in the state of California, 21 or older, 24 beers arriving at your door. You sign for it. You got beer at your front door. It's the very best thing. All right. Shout out to Cooperage. We love them. And let's talk about this wild ass 49ers win that kind of feels like a loss. I don't know. Let's dive in.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
Has got him and a sack him back inside the 30-yard line. Nick Bosa drops Aaron Rodgers for a 13-yard loss.
Quick pass caught by Kittle. He dives and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers.
What a weird game. I don't know how they... It doesn't, to me, feel like... They got their asses kicked. The 49ers did. And... at the end of the game, they were just a little bit better. And that is, I don't even know where to start. That was crazy.
So it was crazy. We've talked all year about how the 49ers have sort of run away and hid in most of their games this season, right? Mm-hmm. They'll just like jump on you early and then they'll just pound you into submission as the game goes on.
Right.
And end up winning comfortably by double digits, right? I kind of thought that's how this game was going to go. And it ended up being one of those games that the type of game that like we've seen the Eagles win, right? Like mm-hmm. the Eagles throughout the first half of the year would sort of play down to their opponent, not be super crisp, but just win all these games. And over time, all the metrics would say, yeah, the record's probably not really indicative of how good they are. Mm-hmm. While the 49ers, when they've had games where they haven't played well, where they've lost guys to injuries or they turn the ball over or all the above, they've just lost those games. And, mm-hmm. you know, they were the big stat coming out of tonight. The 49ers got their first win when trailing by five or more going into the fourth quarter under Kyle Shanahan. They're 1-30, which is insane to think about. But also, you know, they kicked a field goal, I think, with like 4 seconds into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So they weren't down by five for long. But still, the stat stands. And it's just one of those games that the 49ers won ugly. And that felt kind of similar to, you know, one of those games that they would have lost early in the season. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they got a little bit lucky. But look, like the fact that they probably put together, I would say, a C-minus performance overall.
Oh, God.
And
that,
still
that might
won
be generous.
And got to the NFC Championship game,
yeah,
is a win. And you just hope, you know, I don't know if it was the weather. And again, I wouldn't use the weather as an excuse for Brock Purdy, sure, but I think it's pretty clear that his physical limitations are exacerbated when the weather is bad.
Exacerbated?
Like, yeah.
You said exasperated. Like,
exacerbated.
Yeah.
Did I?
Whatever. You said exasperated.
I don't think I did.
His physical.
Anyway.
You did. Check the tape. Chat, okay. Tell him. Tell him, YouTube chat. Anyway, sorry, keep going. Doesn't matter.
I think that, you know, the fact that, he just struggles to throw in the rain. I think that's pretty clear now. And so, you know, looking at this, at the schedule or at the forecast, the 10-day forecast, it looks like it's supposed to be dry next Sunday. Again, we will have plenty of time and that could change. But I just think, like, you know, the small hands, the not super strong arm, you know, we'll talk about Brock Purdy at length, but he just wasn't sharp. And the 49ers offense hasn't been sharp all year when they've lost Debo Samuel. It just feels like they're a little bit rudderless for whatever reason, even though they mm-hmm. still have a ton of talent when Debo Samuel's sidelined. So I just think, wrong comment. Anyway, I just think, that the chat's going off right now. I just think that it was one of those games that maybe the 49ers were due to win, right? Like one of those games that a lot of other teams, you know, this felt like watching the 2022 Vikings win a game. This felt like watching the Eagles of the first half of this year win a game. And the 49ers, when they've been in that scenario and just don't play well, they've typically lost. And they came out of today with, again, like a C-minus, D-plus performance and won a game and advanced in the playoffs. And ultimately, that's all that really matters. And they'll still be heavy favorites going in the NFC Championship game, whether it's Detroit or whether it's Tampa Bay. But, and as we'll talk about tonight and as the week goes forward, there's plenty of areas to improve for this team, because that was not as strong of a showing as you would hope for for a team that we thought had a chance to be sort of historically good as the season wore on, given the talent of the roster and everything else.
Yeah, it's weird because usually in a game like this where, okay, the team wasn't playing well and then they wind up winning, there's a point where you go, okay, that was like the turning point. That was where they kind of figured it out. But there were just a lot of there wasn't one big play. The missed field goal, obviously, by Green Bay, by Anders Carlson, the 41-yarder, was obviously huge. But like plays the 49ers made, there's so many little plays that stick out. Like even Purdy on the last drive, he goes 5 of 6 for 47 yards. But Brandon Ayuk had two unbelievable catches on that drive. The 3rd and 9, where he had to reach down and behind himself to catch it off his shoe tops, is an incredible play. There was the 3rd and 5 or 6 where he had the diving contested catch. It's an incredible play. And those kind of things, like just keeping drives alive like that, kind of throughout the game and throughout the second half, like those just little things kind of add up. But Brock Purdy's scramble, like made it a, they went from 2nd and, what were they? They had a, before the scramble, they had a 2nd and 10, and he scrambles for 9 yards to make it 3rd and 1. Now that opens the whole playbook. That allows McCaffrey to run up the middle for 6 yards and a touchdown. And I think that's why when I look back at this game, it's like, man, they did a lot of things wrong and they did a lot of things poorly. And when you look at everything in that game, they probably should have lost. But I mean, they're really talented. They have a lot of very, very good players. And George Kittle came up with a couple of big plays. Christian McCaffrey came up with a couple of big plays. It was Brandon Ayuk. Juwan Jennings had a really nice game. Fred Warner was running around defensively. Diamador Lenore was excellent. So I think when you just start kind of stacking up, Dre Greenlaw, of course, had the 2 interceptions. It was just kind of the 49ers' talent level was just overwhelming enough to get them a win. And that's great in the divisional round. You win and you're on to the NFC title game. That's just not going to work in the next 1 or 2 games.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, some of those passes were like similar passes to what, well, we'll talk about the Jennings handoff.
Will we?
Some of the passes tonight that didn't get intercepted were ones that like the Ravens intercepted, for example. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's clearly the difference. And like, there was the 49ers absolutely caught some breaks, right? Like I thought on the 4th down quarterback sneak in the first half where the Packers went for it, I thought it was a bad spot in that he got it, but the 49ers were pretty lucky in that there wasn't visible proof on replay that showed the ball beyond the line to gain. Mm-hmm. And that ends up taking points off the board. Obviously it's a 3-point win. If the Packers even settle for a field goal there, the game is drastically different. Mm-hmm. There were the dropped interceptions. There was the missed field goal.
Yeah.
So the 49ers did get fortunate and sometimes that's what it takes. But to your point, like they do have to play a lot better, right? Defensively, there was one point, where they allowed the Packers to convert, 6 of 9 third downs. And I think that was that stat was from the middle of the 3rd quarter when the Packers scored a couple of touchdowns and took the lead. They finished 7 of 13, so they only went 1 for their last 4 on 3rd down. And the Niners defense, as bad as it felt throughout the majority of the game, the Packers last four possessions after scoring the 2 touchdowns on consecutive drives to open the second half, when interception, punt, missed field goal, interception.
Yeah.
So the defense was bad for probably 79% of the game. It felt like, even though the numbers, the Packers numbers weren't like amazing, but it felt like, I mean, Aaron Jones, I think the broadcast said it was the first time in 51 games, the 49ers had allowed a hundred yard rusher. The running game, the run defense wasn't particularly good. The Niners didn't sack Jordan Love, which is pretty problematic. And it didn't even feel like he was pressured all that much.
For
a team that's built like that relies so heavily on its defensive line. Mm-hmm. And when you have Logan Ryan and Tayshaun Gibson playing safety, you need to get more pressure than the 49ers did. And you need to help your defense out by, getting in more long yardage situations with sacks. And that just wasn't happening.
I thought for sure they were going to blitz just a shitload. Like I thought they were going to blitz a lot. against a young quarterback in his first year as a starter in his first divisional playoff game, they had a lot of looks where they would pack the line and then everybody would drop out and they would just rush four. Yeah. And I thought they did an okay job getting him to move around and getting him off his spot. There was a third and two late in the game where they forced him to throw behind Aaron Jones because he never got comfortable in the pocket and had to move around. But to credit to Jordan Love, he made a couple of throws, particularly in the first half, where, I mean, he evaded a sack and then turned it into a big play down the field. So
the play where he hit Dobbs, like Dobbs dusted Ambry Thomas, which was a theme. Mm-hmm. And then Jordan Love rolled left, and I think it converted like a third and 11.
Yeah.
Or something. And I think it was early in the third quarter that led to one of the touchdowns.
Yeah. That was a dime.
Like Love is good. Like I'm pretty impressed by him.
I was too. Except for that last throw. I don't know what the last throw was.
Yeah, I mean,
that was
a tough
if
spot.
Greenlaw didn't grab that, Fred Warner was.
Yeah,
that's a tough throw. But no, I was super impressed by Jordan Love today. He was really, really good.
And Matt LaFleur. I thought Matt LaFleur was excellent.
Steve Wilks got his pants coached off. That was tough. But they came up. I mean, you say all that, and it's true, like 100%. But also, like, credit where it's due. The Niners had the two red zone stops that forced field goals early on. That's enormous. Yep. And then you just mentioned the biggest drives of the game. They're forcing the Packers to settle for a long field goal. They're getting punts. They're getting turnovers. And that's how. I hate saying this because it's intangible and there's like no, I don't think there's like real empirical data, but like experience matters, man. We talked about it a lot, just a cross sport reference here. The Warriors and Kings playoff series last year. It's like, yeah, the Kings might be better in a vacuum, but the Warriors have been here. And the Packers might have played better today, but the Niners have been here. And in the biggest spots, the Niners had dudes that made plays and the Packers did not. So
I agree with everything you said. I just like an aside, but like Ambry Thomas was just bad. Like it was probably his worst game of the season.
Yeah.
Like the two PIs, obviously the one that basically converted, what was it, a third and 15?
Yeah.
And
41 yard
penalty.
Got
touched on. I thought the Niners safeties weren't particularly good for most of the game. Yeah. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand why Logan Ryan, a guy who they signed late in the season, who was on a cruise in what, October or whatever that was, like he's starting a playoff game when you have Jair Brown healthy. I understand Jair Brown's a rookie and he's been out for a while, but like
baffling.
That was just one of those decisions that I just didn't understand at all. And it was pretty clear, like once the Packers knew that Ambry Thomas was not having a great game, they made a pretty concerted effort to pick on him, whether it would be running a bubble screen to his side or attacking him down the field. Like there were missed tackles in addition to coverage bus.
Yep.
It wasn't a great Ambry Thomas game. And I wonder now, like, I just don't know, like Logan, you had Tayshaun Gibson falling over. Also like,
they fell down.
You know,
a lot.
The Niners on their home field. The Niners on their home field should not be slipping like that in the rain.
Yeah.
Right. Like the Niners grass is considered one of the best playing surfaces in the league. I get it was raining, but it felt like the Niners were slipping a hell of a lot more than the Packers were. Like that's just, I don't know what that is, if that's an equipment thing. But it's something that probably shouldn't happen on your home field. Even if it is raining, like if it's happening to both teams, I get it. But if the Packers have like an equipment advantage, and I don't know that they do necessarily, but just, I don't know. I thought that was a weird thing. But again, I'll come back to the Niners have all this cap space, right? And I know Jimmy Ward's hurt right now, but man, if they don't win the Super Bowl and they end up getting flambéed on the back end, like they did for parts of today, the decision to not bring back Jimmy Ward is going to be one of the more indefensible ones that this regime has had.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't really make a ton of sense at the time, but yeah, look, here's with Jair Brown specifically, like they let Jimmy Ward walk because they were going to draft Jair Brown and he was going to be their safety next to Talanoa Hufanga. And that's what they're going to do. he was one of two players along with Sam Darnold who was active and didn't play today. So he's either hurt or I don't know. Like if he was unable to play, I'm not sure why Samuel Womack is not up, or one of the two defensive linemen that they brought up from the practice squad who maybe could have helped stop the run. It's a weird decision, but Shanahan also didn't say anything after the game about Jerry Brown being hurt. So I'm at a loss. I got nothing for you.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Jake Moody?
Sure.
Let me start.
We can talk about Jake Moody, and then I want to talk about Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan had a weird night.
He had a bad night, dude. But real quick, Jake Moody misses the 48-yarder, because of course he did. But then drills a 52-yarder in a huge spot.
The 48-yarder was blocked, but like just...
Okay, fair enough. He got the 48-yarder blocked. He was hooking that shit left for sure. Like, book it. It was going left. No, so the 48-yarder gets blocked, but he steps up 52-yarder in a massive spot because he misses that field goal. The Packers have great field position, and they can go up two scores with a field goal. They need like 25 yards for a chance to go up two scores and probably put the game away in the fourth quarter. So props to Jake Moody for that, making the biggest kick of the year. And frankly, like, that's kind of why they drafted him. They're like, yeah, we trust him in big spots, and he hadn't done it during the regular season, but he did in the postseason. That's huge. Why are they not launching every kick into the third fucking deck? I mean, so, how many times do we have to see this? How many? We've been talking about this for weeks. Like, yeah, this is weird. They do these, like, not pooch kicks, but these, like, they sky these kickoffs so they can try and get down there and, like, force a short return. Nah, man, the field position is not worth it. Just kick it out of the end zone. The extra 6 yards you're saving or whatever is not worth it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry for the F word. I'm at a loss because the next kickoff out of the back of the end zone. It's like, he can do it. Just do that. It's such a weird, Kyle Shanahan has this like thing with special teams, right? And that special teams thing is, hey, just don't mess up. Like, just catch the punt. Just make the field. Yep, we're not going to run fake punts because we're just going to kick it and then trust our defense because that's how football works. But then when it comes to kickoffs, it's like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to try and kick it super high to give our coverage team time to get down there and then try and kick it like right onto the goal line so the guy can't just kneel on it. And now he has to bring it out. Now we can stop him at like the 16 instead of them getting it at the 25. Like, why is that now suddenly a thing? Like, now all of a sudden you want to get cued on special teams? That's stupid. It doesn't make sense. Do touchbacks. Just do the touchback. Anyways.
1,000%.
You had the
73-yard kickoff from, like, the Niners score a touchdown, right? They get that 39-yard run from Christian McCaffrey. They retake the lead, 14-13. And it's like, okay, Niners have, like, a little bit of momentum after the Packers scored, right? Like, the Niners did not lap the Packers like they have done so many times this year, right?
No, they
so
sure
they,
didn't.
Instead of they missed the field goal at the end of the first half. They go 3 and out to open the second half. The Packers go right down and score. So the exact opposite of lapping happens. And then the 49ers, for the first time in the game, maybe aside from the George Kittle touchdown, okay, they get a Christian McCaffrey touchdown. You're like, all right, maybe they're going to start to, you know, like, put their foot down on this game and steal some momentum back.
That was totally how that felt, by the way.
Yeah. And then the kickoff doesn't get booted into Narnia, like you said. And the guy returns at 73 yards. And then 4 plays later, the Packers score a second consecutive touchdown. And they get a 2-point conversion that succeeds. Right. So it's just, and at that point, it was like, man, the 49ers like really might lose. They really might get upset, the one seed in the NFC with a bye week. That's one of the most talented teams we've seen in this franchise's history, which is saying a lot, is losing to the number 7 seed in a season where they haven't come back to win all year, in part because they're trying to be super cute with these kickoffs.
It's bizarre.
It was bizarre. And fortunately for them, they won the game. But like, you know, you give up a touchdown there and they lose the game by a score. That's a huge talking point.
Yeah.
Along with Kyle Shanahan's, and this is probably a good transition into Kyle Shanahan's night. The end of the first half sequence where Shanahan was just clearly intent on settling for a long field goal attempt in the driving rain with the kicker who's been super sketchy throughout most of the year. Mm-hmm. I just didn't like it. Like, you had a play call on 3rd and 2 and then you let the clock go down and then you just burn one of your 3 timeouts mm-hmm. for no real reason other than like, oh, we just want to make sure the Packers don't have the ball last. It's like, it's raining, man. Like, you have a really good defense. You shouldn't worry about Jordan Love getting the ball back with 45 seconds left and going to get points at the end of the half. Like, that's,
yeah,
you shouldn't play scared like that. Like, go get points. You need points here. You're in scoring position. You've struggled. If you are trying to lap them, then like, get a touchdown there, come out in the second half, get another touchdown, and then take control of the game. And Shanahan was just content to sit on the ball, waste one of the timeouts. And still, after all that, you're settling for a 48-yard field goal in the rain that gets blocked.
It just, dude, and good.
It was just, you know, that was weird. We can talk about the Juwan Jennings thing because Shanahan had kind of an interesting
answer to
that one. But the zone read to Brock Purdy to start the drive, that was weird. Like, at that point in the game, it was like, feed Christian McCaffrey. Just keep feeding him because he was rolling for most of the night. And the 49ers are starting drives with a run to Juwan Jennings and a zone read to Brock Purdy. Like, it didn't make any sense in the moment. So I thought Shanahan had a weird night. And, you know, ultimately it didn't come back to bite them too badly, but it was not Kyle Shanahan's best night from a play calling perspective.
No, the end of the half was just a disaster. It was like they didn't really have a plan. And they got into what was field goal range, and I don't understand it. I just don't understand the risk reward assessment there of settling for a long field goal versus maybe giving the Packers the ball back with 12 seconds left. Like, it doesn't make any sense. The McCaffrey thing is wild because yeah, I get that they were playing from behind for a lot of the game. But they weren't the type of behind where it's like, oh, shoot, got to be one-dimensional now. Like, down 2 scores, you got to go, you know, throw it every time. Like, that's what happened to the Packers. The Cowboys against the Packers. Packers punch them in the mouth, they go up 14-0. It's like, all right, scrap the run game. It's throwing time. And at that point, your defense can just sit on the pass and you go up 27-0 like Green Bay did in Dallas. It was never like that. The Niners were never at a point where it's like, dude, put the run game away. They would just abandon it for the McCaffrey had a drive where the Niners go 2 handoffs to him. He goes for 14 yards on the 2 handoffs. So it's like 4 and then 10. And they gave it to him again, and it might have gone for a yard. He might have no gain. So it's 2nd and long. And then they just went pass again. And okay, 2nd and long, you're probably going to throw it. But dude, run it again. Give it to your best player again. Go extended handoff.
Yeah,
do something
until
a little
they
bit
stop
tricky.
You.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's weird because we know they don't like forget that Christian McCaffrey is there. We know they know he's there. But to go for a team that's like, yeah, we want to get to 30 rushes. You know, 30 carries is the number. They were at 24. One of those was Brock Purdy's kneel down, so make it 23. One of them was a Brock Purdy read option zone read thing. So call it 22. And one was a handoff to Juwan Jennings. So I don't quite know. Maybe the Packers are just doing something defensively where the Niners are like, oh God, we can't run against this. But you still got to try. Because putting it in Brock Purdy's hands tonight, whether it was weather or whether it was the defense or whatever it was, he wasn't good. He wasn't good. I'm sorry. Like, he was bad. And on the last drive, did they get it done? Like 100%. Totally. But he also got bailed out a couple times. There were a couple of really nice catches on that drive on some not-so-good throws. So that's fine. It wasn't his night. I'm sure he'll be better in the NFC title game. In fact, I would bet that he is better in that game, particularly if it's dry. But it was like they continue. It was like Shanahan wanted him to throw his way out of it or something. It was just an odd, an odd choice, especially without Deebo Samuel, your second best receiver. It was like, all right, hey, Juwan Jennings had a really, really nice game. That catch he had on third down, the leaping 21-yard grab, was a game saver. But like, Juwan Jennings is not Deebo. You know, Ray's McLeod is not Deebo. It's just not. I don't know.
Hey guys, it's Kyle from Candlestick Chronicles, and I want to tell you about Factor. Now, we're far enough into the new year that maybe you're starting to wane a little bit on your resolutions. Maybe you wanted to take a little bit better care of yourself. Maybe you wanted to eat better, and you're going, man, you know what? Work and life gets so busy. I don't have time to grocery shop. I don't have time to meal prep. I don't have time to do all that. Factor takes that off the table for you with ready-to-eat meal delivery that takes all the stress out of meal planning, and it sets you up for success in the new year. They have calorie smart options. They have vegan options. They have veggie options. They have keto options. And then there's like 55 weekly add-ons. So you'll have a ton of nutritious and flavorful options to kickstart your resolutions. One of my favorite Factor things are the smoothies. They have fruit smoothies. They have like a mango and a tropical fruit and a strawberry banana that are delicious. They also have protein shakes that are fantastic. I really enjoy the espresso one. It is a delicious way to start the day. So look, I'm always trying to find ways to skip the trap of overpriced takeout, whether it's getting it delivered or whatever. Factor helps. Factor, I open my fridge. There's a meal right there. I throw it in the microwave or in the oven, whatever you prefer. And I throw mine in the microwave. It's ready to go in a couple of minutes. And I have a delicious, nutritious meal right in front of me. And it wasn't a headache to plan. It wasn't a headache to cook. And I didn't have to shop for anything. That's why Factor is the very best. Head to factormeals.com/candlestick50 and use code candlestick50 to get 50% off. That's code candlestick50 at factormeals.com/candlestick50 to get 50% off.
Yo, it's your homies Kyle and Chris for Lamb Chops. SGLambChops.com is the website. They are the official clothing brand of Candlestick Chronicles. And follow them on Instagram at SGLambChops because they have some really cool looking stuff that your bland ass boy over here is not very good at styling on his own. And so I pop over to the Instagram. I see how other people are dressing themselves in maybe it's the wolf shorts or the lion shorts, or maybe it's a pair of joggers, or maybe it's the ash gray hoodie that you and I love so much. And I base my outfits off of that, and it always makes me look dope, which is the single most important thing.
And it's also comfortable. It's also high quality. Yeah. It's super stylish. They're conversation starters, honestly. They also have kid sizes on here too.
Yes, that is.
And everything's correct. Unisex. Yeah. We should point out also. So, yeah. No matter if you're a man or woman, these clothes will look great on you.
Or a child. They have children's sizes and a lot of their stuff as well. Use promo code Candlestick20 today to get 20% off your order, or you can do it tomorrow or whenever. Candlestick20 is a promo code any day of the week to get 20% off your order from SGLambChops.com. Shout out to them. We really appreciate their support, and we would appreciate it if you support them by going to SGLambChops.com and ordering some dope, comfortable, high-quality clothing. Join the herd today.
Brock Purdy leads the NFL in effective lollipop throws.
Dude, that is a bar. That's a goddamn bar by you.
The Jennings one was just like, you see him like, it just, the way it came out of his hand tonight, I don't know if it was the rain or what. It was just such a lollipop to Jennings. And then you see, after a couple replays, you're like, all right, he kind of layered it over the guy in front of him. He needed to put it up there. But even the Kittle one, like, it was well placed. The Kittle touchdown was well placed, mm-hmm. but it didn't really feel like it had the same velocity that Purdy had. Like mm-hmm. I think about Purdy, like week one in Pittsburgh, like the back shoulder throw to Brandon Ayuk, that was like, it wasn't a laser, but it was on far more of a line than,
and
it's a different type of throw. I know, mm-hmm. but it didn't feel like he had any of that juice in his arm tonight. And I don't know if it was a weather thing, but that's what I mean. Like the games where the conditions are bad are where his limitations become real limitations. And, you know, when he's playing inside, when the weather's neutral, like then he's fine. He's not really affected. But man, there were some times, like there were a lot of just short layup throws that, you know, I think one of the strengths of Brock Purdy's game that might get overlooked just is the precision on the short throws. Like throughout the year, he's been really good at those check down throws and giving it to guys in a position where they can make plays after the catch. Mm-hmm. And he's just missing those throws by like 5 yards tonight.
Yeah.
The timing never felt like it was there. Mm-hmm. And he seemed out of sorts. The pass protection wasn't great.
Green Bay did a good job defensively.
Yeah, Green Bay did a much better job defensively than I would have expected. Mm-hmm. But the pass protection still kind of leaves a lot to be desired. If it's Aiden Hutchinson next week against Colton McKivitz, that's a pretty scary matchup for the 49ers, I would say, at this point. And it does feel like when McKivitz is getting beaten, like Brock Purdy can see it. It's in his line of sight because it's the right side. Right. And that can be particularly problematic because sometimes I think that'll lead to Purdy hesitating a little bit or not throwing within rhythm. Mm-hmm. But he did get it done on the final drive. And this was, as our favorite cast member, Nick Wagner, pointed out on X, formerly Twitter. This was the first time this season the 49ers had a come from behind game winning drive in the fourth quarter. It's kind of crazy to think about.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you don't win any close games, that's what happens.
I guess.
Yeah, I like that. I like that the big thing to pull out tonight was Brock Purdy has one game-winning drive in his career, and it was last season against the Raiders. Cool. Cool, yeah. Man. That's basically the same thing. Now, I was overall, the 49ers played far worse than I thought they would. But Green Bay also was a lot better than I thought they were going to be. I didn't think necessarily, especially defensively, they were going to be able to replicate what they did against Dallas. But they really, really did. And it was just a wild ass game.
I think Green Bay is going to be good, like for a while.
Yeah,
I think Jordan Love has a potential to be like a dude you can win a lot of games with.
Yeah. And all of their receivers are like 18 years old. And they're really good. And Matt LaFleur is a very good coach, as we saw tonight. I thought the touchdown to Bo Melton with the fake screen was brilliant. Like, that's just such a great play design and play call in that spot. I have nothing but good things to say about Green Bay. They were awesome. But how many times have we talked about this with the Niners this year? Even if they don't play well, their talent's just kind of going to win out. And I think we saw that on the last drive. It was George Kittle, and it was Brandon Ayuk, and there's some Christian McCaffrey, and there's Brock Purdy with a scramble. There's Chris Conley.
And Chris Conley.
There's Chris Conley with a huge catch. That was crazy ass game, and then Dre Greenlaw comes up with a couple of picks. What the hell was Dre Greenlaw doing at the end of the game,
dude? So everyone on the broadcast or everyone watching at home probably saw this.
Hey,
but Greenlaw,
hey, chat,
gets
what
the
did
pick.
You yell at your TV after the interception? Go ahead, Chris.
Greenlaw gets the interception, and then a fan right in front of the camera has his hat in his hand as he's celebrating with his hand up. And all you know is that you cannot see what's happening with Dre Greenlaw.
Nothing.
And that he's not down, that he's trying to like make something happen. And it's just like, will you get down, guy? Like, what are you, what you're trying to score here? Like, are you a ball carrier now? Like, if the Packers would have ripped the ball from Dre Greenlaw in that spot,
my God.
And stayed alive, like that would have been one of the worst plays in NFL history, full stop.
You can't if he had I'm gonna live in the timeline for a minute where he fumbles that ball. If the Packers go on to win the game, I don't think there's any way you bring Dre Greenlaw back next year. Like, he just can't be on your team anymore. Not that he's bad or anything like that. I just don't think you can have that player on your team, because that's not Roger Craig fumbling against the Giants. What was that, the 88 NFC Championship game? 87, 80, sure. NFC Championship? Whatever it was, whenever Roger Craig fumbled.
I was a year and a half old.
Okay. whatever year that was, that's just okay. The running back fumbled in a spot where he needed to just hang on to the ball. Like, okay, that sucks. But if a linebacker trying to return a meaningless interception for a touchdown, fumbling and leading to a loss after they would have just won, like, remember Nate Clements did that against the Falcons in 2010? You just can't. Yes. That just, oh man, that's, oof, boy.
Wow, that's a good callback, but yeah, I completely forgot thanks about that.
Dre Bly, I believe, did it as well against the Falcons a couple years before. At home, though.
Good call by you.
Somebody in the YouTube chat said they were yelling for a lateral. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I mean, if you had Niners minus 9.5, you probably wanted them to return that for a touchdown.
Oh, dude.
I saw some people making that joke on X, formerly Twitter.
That also would have, oh my God. And if you returned that for a touchdown, that also would have put the game at the over. Over was 50 and a half, and the final total was 45.
Yeah, God. that's crazy. I feel like the Packers probably let Christian McCaffrey score at the end there, because they knew that, like, it, their only chance to keep the game going was to get the ball back eventually. Because you see that sometimes, but I say that to say, like, that was a great Christian McCaffrey game.
Oh, it felt like
he could have had 10 more carries. But to have, you know, 17 carries, 98 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was the most targeted guy. He had 12 targets. He had 30 yards on 12 targets, which isn't great from an efficiency perspective. He caught 7 passes.
But how many of those runs looked like they were going to be for 0 and they wound up being for like 3 or 4? It felt like he did that a handful of times tonight where he just created yards by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was excellent. And obviously scoring the game winning touchdown on a drive where there was so much focus on Brock Purdy.
I don't want to dive super far into this, but that was weird clock management by the Packers too.
I thought they would have been calling timeouts.
Yeah, I get wanting to have your timeouts on offense, but also, like, I think I'd rather have like a minute and a half and one timeout than a minute 7 and all 3. Maybe it's a wash, but I expected them to call some TOs and they didn't.
Yeah, I think they were hoping to get to overtime there. But I don't know, man. Are you concerned about the defensive line?
No, I don't think so. I definitely, yeah, you know what? Yeah. Yeah. Because I was going to say, I don't think so, because typically the Niners are in spots where teams can't just line up and run against them like the Packers did tonight. But chances are that's what it's going to look like in the NFC title game and the Super Bowl if they win that. So, yeah, I definitely think that's a concern, where if they can't get the other team in a negative game script and the other team can afford to run the ball, I think that there are some opportunities for explosive plays against that defensive line.
Yeah, I kind of thought we would see at some point, and maybe we see it next week, but it just feels like, again, the Niners didn't have any sacks. Javon Kinlaw was the only guy not named Nick Bosa to register a quarterback hit. Nick Bosa had 5 quarterback hits. Yeah. But
that was a peak 2023 Nick Bosa game where you're just watching, and on the surface, it's like, man, I feel like Nick Bosa didn't do a lot. But then you look at the numbers and you go back and watch, you're like, oh, he's around the quarterback a lot.
I remember in 2019, there was a lot of negative discussion around D Ford because of his availability and the fact that, like, he had a hamstring issue and mm-hmm. I forget what I think it was a back injury too. And he only ended up playing like 20% of the snaps that season.
Mm-hmm.
But man, when D Ford was playing, the defensive line was just at a completely different level.
Yep.
And it feels like this group, even with Chase Young, even with Nick Bosa being later on in his career, even with Javon Hargrave, even with Eric Armstead back, and Armstead probably isn't close to 100%.
Yeah,
dealing with foot and knee things.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like the Niners defense is designed to be dominant up front, and they haven't been dominant. They certainly weren't dominant tonight. And while, 21 points isn't like a huge total, it just felt like there were a lot of plays or a lot of like drives that could have gone much differently had the defensive line make more of an impact on Jordan Love.
Yeah. Yeah, man. See, I'm interested to see if they play Dallas or not Dallas, if they play Detroit. I'm interested to see if we come away with the same takeaway against a quarterback that does not handle pressure as well. Because Jordan Love, like I said,
owned Jared Goff.
Yeah, and there were a few times tonight where it looked like the Niners were going to get Jordan Love on the ground and he escaped and turned it into a positive play. And I don't think you're getting that out of Jared Goff. So if the Niners defensive line has the exact same game from a pass rush perspective against Detroit, assuming they play Detroit, that they had against Green Bay, I think we see 3 or 4 sacks. Because Jared Goff doesn't move around the pocket the way that Jordan Love does.
Yeah, but the Lions do have a really good offensive line.
That's also very true. It's a great point. But we'll look ahead to that once we know who they're playing.
Yeah. But, oh man, it was just like, I think one of the reasons why it was so jarring was because they hadn't, the way that game went, that version of game was one the 49ers have lost like all year.
Dude, 1,000%.
And the fact that,
it
was that type of game, but they ended up winning was, I mean, I think ultimately, like, if the Niners win the Super Bowl, there's going to be discussion about like, yeah, we like probably needed to learn how to like win sort of a weird, ugly game where we don't play well. Yeah. Because, and this isn't a dig on the Niners, but like when you win so many games in dominant fashion and you're just playing really well, and the times you've got kicked in the teeth, you've just kind of folded, like that can really come back to hurt you in the playoffs because you're going to get kicked in the teeth. And the 49ers got kicked in the teeth and they didn't play well. They committed some dumb penalties. They didn't stop the run. Brock Purdy threw some passes that could have been picked. For sure, the fact that Brock Purdy didn't have an interception tonight is kind of wild.
Man, that's
shocking. But it was just one of those. Like there were a lot of things they missed a field goal, right? They did the opposite of lapping the Packers at the end of the second quarter and early in the third. And they still won the game. So like if they do go on to win the Super Bowl, I do think there's going to be value in the way this game went as sort of a confidence builder, a learning experience going forward.
Yeah, I'm super interested to see if this was a precursor to them getting steamrolled in the NFC title game, where they are just, they hit one of those stretches like in week 6 through 8, where they just kind of inexplicably struggle. Or was this a, hey, haven't played a meaningful game in 3 weeks. Welcome back to football. Here's a team that's playing really well in the Green Bay Packers. And they got just kind of punched in the face a little bit. Woke them up. And now they're going to be a buzzsaw the rest of the way. I think those are the two options.
I think there's a chance.
I think they lose next week or they win the Super Bowl. I think that's what's going to happen. I think they either lose next week or go to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Thanks, man.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I think we'll know more. You know, the one thing Shanahan did say about Debo Samuel's injury after the game was that it was similar to the one in Cleveland. And the injury in Cleveland forced Samuel to miss 3 games, and then he had the bye week before he came back.
Right.
So Samuel had to miss a month the last time he had an injury like this. And obviously, you know, by the time you're listening to this on Sunday, maybe Samuel will have gone through some more testing and we'll have a better idea. But, you know, you kind of worry that after getting tested and, you know, I think they had some imaging done, for him just to be out, like to come out in the second half in a hoodie is not a promising sign. Maybe he can play through it. But, you know, to not have Deebo Samuel in the NFC Championship game would be a pretty, pretty substantial blow. Yeah. But at least the Niners would have a week to sort of prepare in that scenario rather than losing in mid game. When, like, he had two touches, it felt like it was going to be a big Deebo Samuel game from the jump.
Yep. Yep. And he returned that kickoff.
Which, like, let's just stop.
Dude, just getting cute. Just special teams don't matter until the third round when you got to pick a kicker and the kickoff.
Bizarre, I'm obviously Deebo Samuel is generational when it comes to like being a guy with the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we've seen from him in the NFL that has suggested like, oh, you know what? We got to have him back there returning kickoffs.
He's had a couple of okay returns.
He's had a couple of okay returns, and he had one a few weeks ago that he almost broke. But it's not like he's Devin Hester back there.
No, I know. Like, right. I would rather take the ball at the 25 and then run a trick play to get him the ball on first down.
Well, just like he has shoulder issues. He had a shoulder issue earlier in the season. Like, why do we need to risk like high impact hits? Deebo Samuel, unless he's like has a penchant for returning kickoffs for touchdowns in the NFL, which we've never seen before.
He was
in college, but like this is it's just completely unnecessary.
I don't get it at all.
You have Ray McLeod, your fourth receiver, available. Right. Let him return kickoffs.
Yeah, dude. I don't get it at all. But I'm with you though. Shanahan even talked about it in his post-game presser, like, losing Deebo Samuel mid-game changes a lot of what you can do schematically. You saw it with the handoff to Juwan Jennings. B, when Ray McLeod goes in motion, it doesn't affect the defense the same way it does when Deebo Samuel goes in motion. But we saw the Niners offense struggle really bad against Cleveland when Samuel went out. And granted, they were missing Trent Williams too. But against Minnesota, moving the ball wasn't a problem. Against the Bengals, moving the ball wasn't a problem. Their defense was a way bigger issue in both of those games. So what you said, I think, is spot on. That's kind of what I was circling back to, is if they have a week to game plan without Deebo Samuel, if he's going to be out, we don't know that yet. But if they find out tomorrow, okay, he's out next week, they have a way better chance to figure out a game plan and how to move the ball without him than they do mid-game where, hey, had a massive script ready to get the ball to number 19 and now he's just not in the game anymore, so let's figure it out.
Yeah, you still have Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, and Christian McCaffrey. That would be plenty for a lot of teams.
right. And Trent Williams still, on, by the way.
Right. On the Juwan Jennings run, because I was fascinated to see that Kyle Shanahan got asked by, I think it was Grant Cohn, about that play. And what
do you not trust Jordan Mason?
What Shanahan said was he basically, the play call was just a number on Purdy's armband, but there was an adjustment. It's like this play call, like 41 or whatever, with he called it like a hezzy, like an, I don't know what the adjustment is, but I'm guessing whatever the adjustment that Shanahan called was not like Purdy did not do, like when he called the play to his teammates. So I think in that spot on the wristband, I'm assuming that's a Deebo Samuel handoff. And what Shanahan said was like, Ron Burgundy'd it. Like, remember the scene where Ron Burgundy reads the,
he'll read whatever's on the teleprompter.
He'll read whatever's on the teleprompter. Shanahan has a term for it. He was like, we Ron Burgundy'd that. And so Purdy ends up calling the play that should be for Deebo, but because Jennings is in the game, he lines up in Debo's spot, and it didn't work. So I guess that explanation is a little bit better than like Shanahan being like, oh yeah, Let's give Juwan a carry here.
It's first to Juwan, baby. Let's go.
but I don't know, you know, again, and there was a zone read for Brock Purdy. It's like, at this point,
it felt like they were throwing like, just the kitchen sink at Green Bay and figuring out if something would work.
But it just wasn't like, oh, like Brock Purdy, like you're really going to catch him off guard with a Brock Purdy zone read.
I love
right,
that.
To the wide
end. I love the idea that Shanahan's calling that. And he's like, we're putting this on tape. We're going to make sure teams prep for this.
Juwan Jennings handoff.
Yeah.
Jennings was good, though. I thought he had a good game.
Really freaking good, man.
Brandon Ayuk's catch, the diving one on third down on the last drive was one of his best catches of the season, particularly given the moment.
Mm-hmm. A contested and diving catch is gnarly.
Yeah. And Chris Connolly's play was huge, obviously. That was really big on that drive. And it's kind of wild that the 49ers are at a point where Chris Connolly's like making a huge catch, one of the biggest catches of the season, but he made it.
Sure did. He was open.
So yeah, like it was a very ugly game. It was a C-minus D-plus performance. Some breaks went their way. And you know what? You advance, and that's all that really matters. And if you can win a game with a C-minus D-plus performance, like you should feel pretty good about just the overall quality of your team. But to win a championship, you need to be a hell of a lot better than they were.
Yep.
And I think they have a pretty clear understanding of that.
Yeah, two things can be true here. You can say, hey, a win is a win. Win's a win. No such thing as an ugly win. No such thing. It's a W. Moving on. Like, that's 100% correct. And that is the largest takeaway of all this is the 49ers are playing next Sunday. But on the other hand, it's what you just said. That's great. They're going to play next Sunday. That is the goal. That's better than not playing next Sunday. But they cannot play this same game next Sunday. Because if they play this same game next Sunday, they will very likely lose.
Yeah, Brock Purdy needs to be a lot better.
Way better. Like, way better.
Kyle Shanahan needs to be better. They were making, Greg Olsen was making the point, and what like comparing Brock Purdy to Jimmy Garoppolo and other 49ers quarterbacks that Shanahan's had, and saying, you know, Shanahan really trusts this guy to be in shotgun and go empty. And it's like, man, I get it. You can do a lot more in the passing game and you can be really efficient and you have, you know, a lot of really good eligible receivers out there. I totally get it. But it always feels like when the 49ers are at their best, they're building the passing game off the running game. And you do most of that when you are under center and you're doing the boot action and you're doing all that stuff. I don't think Kyle Shanahan is as good of a like designer of a downfield passing game from shotgun as he is like designing running plays off play action or designing pass plays off play action and sort of tying everything together. And when you're constantly in shotgun and spreading the ball out and going empty again, like Kyle Shanahan has forgotten way more about football than I'll ever know. I'm not trying to say I'm smarter than Kyle Shanahan, but I think when you're trying to mask a quarterback's deficiencies and when the weather is as it was today, when you can be more balanced and you can throw different looks via play action and with the running game, I think the Niners are a lot more difficult to stop than when it's just like, hey, we're going to be an empty and you're going to know that they're throwing it. And, you know, you're asking the offensive line to hold up against a pretty good pass rush when we know the offensive line in pass protection has been average to below average all season. And I think that's probably being a little bit generous, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am concerned for the 49ers about that. Like if their plan is just going to be to rely so heavily on Brock Purdy and shotgun and going empty, you're asking a lot of your offensive line and you're asking a lot of Brock Purdy, whereas you can give him a lot more layups by utilizing play action in the boot game and the running game. And at the same time, you're giving Christian McCaffrey more touches.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be ugly when his first downfield throw of the game should have been a pick six. Like, it feels like when that happens, the team is just dialed into whatever the 49ers are going to want to do, and they don't have a great adjustment for that in the passing game. I also think that might have thrown Purdy off a little bit, too. He seemed a little hesitant to let it rip down the field.
There are some comments in the YouTube chat, people saying, like, it was raining like crazy. You couldn't really, it didn't feel like the rain was super. I think when the rain was coming down, it was coming down really hard at the game. And I think it might have had more of an impact than maybe it seemed just watching it, because it wasn't like puddles were forming. It wasn't like guys, guys were slipping, but it didn't look like a monsoon.
It didn't look like the game in Washington the rain, in 2019.
Right. But it did look like the rain had a, like, I think the rain had more of an impact than it looked on TV.
Yeah. I think maybe. I agree. It's the second time this year they played in a wet game, and Purdy has been bad in both of them. There's two worst games of the year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyways. So,
I've got a.
They asked Jimmy Johnson at the end of in the post game show, who you think? I think Brian Menifee asked.
Kurt Menifee.
Asked him, he's like, Jimmy, who the Niners playing next week? He's like, well, it's going to be the winner of the Lions or Bucks.
Wow, he said that?
It was like,
whoa, the hot Jimmy, take culture has gotten out of hand.
We know, Jimmy. Like, who do you think's winning that game? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
But I'm with Jimmy in that. I definitely think the Niners are going to play the winner of Lions Bucks. I'm fully on board.
I'd be floored if they played somebody else. There's like, oh no, Dallas is back. Is that the Cowboys music?
How about them Cowboys?
How about them, huh?
All
right. I don't think I have anything else right now. You want to do Prize Picks real quick?
I have to.
It was ugly for your boy. It was better for you than for me, but you're trying to win it all back. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports. It is the single best way to add a little spice to your enjoyment of your sporting events. I'll run through my list first. I went with Aaron Jones. So what Prize Picks is with daily fantasy, you don't play like a million other players, and you're not playing against like sharp guys or bots or anything like that. It's just you pick 2 to 6 players. They have stat projections. You pick more or less on the stat projection, and you let it rock. We're supposed to say then you watch the winnings roll in, but if you're following me and Chris, the winnings are not
fading me.
Rolling in at this point. If you're fading us, you're probably stacking cash right now. They also do Apple Pay for deposits, which is great. But anyways, Aaron Jones, I had Aaron Jones more than 69.5 rushing yards, nailed it. He went for 108. I had Jordan Love more than 7.5 rushing yards, no dice. He went for 3. Debo Samuel more than 16.5 rushing yards. He had 0. Brandon Ayuk more than 4.5 catches. He had 3. Christian McCaffrey more than 22.5 rushing yards in his first 5 attempts. He had 22. 1 for 5. That's not going to give me any money. That's tough. What did you take?
So I wrote mine down.
Yeah.
And I cannot find where I wrote them. I know I've I had
them right here for
plays.
You. Yeah.
Oh, perfect. I had the demon play for Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, more than 99.5 yards.
He had 32.
Just shy. Just short at 32 yards. You had Brock Purdy with a fantasy score of more than 19. He had 252 yards and a touchdown. I don't think that's gonna get it done, bud.
Yeah, I needed that one more score.
Yeah, you sure did. That's like 16. Yeah, his fantasy score is like 17 or so. And then you had George Kittle more than 79.5 receiving yards. He had 81. Good call by you there, along with the touchdown. Great work by you.
1 for 3. It was a power play, but, you know, it's fine. Like, at some point, one of these payouts that pays, you know, 13.5x or whatever it is going to hit.
You're this close.
And I'm going to be in the green. Yep. And that's all it's really going to take.
Yeah. Just a big swing. Sure. Yeah.
Scared money don't make money. We are due.
We're
chasing losses. All the smart gambling tips out there. Come find me. That's not what it is.
Nope. That's not what we're gambling. No, it definitely isn't. It's daily fantasy, dog. Come on.
It's daily fantasy.
Yeah.
Right. But if you were gambling in some other platform, in some other place where it's legal, don't follow my advice.
Yeah. But daily fantasy sports, man. It's the best, and you can join us at prizepicks.com/candlestick. Use promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. That is prizepicks.com/candlestick. Promo code candlestick for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy. All right. Can't wait to watch Bucks Lions. Who do you think is going to win that one? I'll tell you what.
Well,
I think the winner. Oh, go ahead. You do it.
You do the joke. We're going to say the same thing. We're going to make the same joke. The winner, I definitely think the winner's going to play the Niners next week.
That's a good call.
I'm going to take the Lions. I just don't think the Bucks are that good.
I think the Lions are going to boat race those dudes.
Okay. I'd believe it. Like, that wouldn't shock me. Man, it would be a hell of a moment for Baker Mayfield though if they pulled it out.
I'm rooting for it. I would love it for Baker, but I just the Lions feel like a buzzsaw right now. You have Dan Campbell crying and telling his guys that he's gonna like go to war for him and all this other stuff.
Yeah. Anyways. We'll see. Right. We shall see. Who do you like in Kansas City, Buffalo?
I think Buffalo's going to win. I think Buffalo's getting them this time. Like, at some point, Kansas City's inability to score a lot of points is going to be a problem.
Yeah, maybe. I think there's a pretty good chance Kansas City ends up going to the Super Bowl again.
Okay. Sure.
I know the Ravens look really good, but...
The Ravens looked awesome today.
Yeah.
Just defensively, they are dialed in. I was way more impressed with them defensively than I was offensively.
What the Ravens did today was what I thought the Niners were going to do to the Packers.
Pulled away in the
almost to a T, but didn't happen. All right. We will talk to you guys later in the week.
Hit the thumbs up. If you're in the video, hit the thumbs up, please. Yeah. We would appreciate the hell out of that. Thanks. Oh,
Do we maybe want to do a quick one tomorrow after we find out who the 49ers are playing in the title game?
Oh, you and I are going to have to talk about that separately.
Offline. Okay.
Yes. Appreciate everybody. Thank you. I'm going to be out this week. Chris will be on with somebody, I guess. We'll have to figure it out.
Perfect week for a little vacation.
Yeah. You know, it's again, we can talk about it offline if you want.
sorry, don't mean to blow up your spot.
No, it's fine. So Chris will be here. Stay locked in. Goodbye, everybody.
See you guys. Bye.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.